Live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host. And if it is the second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4, it's Understanding Autism, starring Kimberly Isaac and all the way from Houston, Texas, Paul Loudon. Happy birthday, by the way.
Well, it was yesterday, but thank you.
Belated birthday. Is that what they call it? Belated.
Yeah,
that's one way to say it, yeah.
So how are you guys? I haven't seen you guys since, you know, before we started the show.
You haven't seen us since last year.
Yeah, that's right. That's even more profound insight. And we have an audience, people looking at our sign. You can see we put up our sign. Do you like it?
Oh, you know what? I know.
I didn't notice. I was too busy.
Yeah, it's pretty
setting
cool
up
thing.
Show.
So a great show today, but I think before you say what the show is, we haven't done background in a while.
Yeah, background.
You look scared.
Yeah.
I was getting scared when she looked scared. Did you see that? No, but we. I think starting off the new year, I think it's good to say, who is Paul Loudon? Who is Kimberly Isaac? And maybe who is Dave Isaac?
I'll start with me, I guess. I was diagnosed with Asperger's 8 years ago. And so I'm just a person who's been learning about autism by living with it and talking about my experiences on the spectrum.
And I must say, I think you've helped so many people. I think this is so unique that here you are. So you're incredibly articulate, incredibly intelligent, and can communicate the live experiences of what you go through and what you have gone through and what works, what doesn't work, to help other people that have sometimes no idea what the issue is.
Well,
that's phenomenal.
That's what Kim and I were talking about before we came here, is I just feel it's really important to help people understand what autism really is and not just, you know, what they see it as based on, you know, how it shows up in a couple movies or whatever.
So, and the books don't justify it sometimes. You're a living proof example of what it is and how you, you know, how you can look at it, different perspectives, and how you can help people.
And I think we'll get a little bit into more of that with this show, but let's hear about Kim real quick.
Yes.
All right, let's hear about Kim. All right, I'm Kim. I'm an autism specialist. I've been in the field for 17 years now, and I specialize in working with teens and adults on the autism spectrum and also parent training and family goal setting, and have a certification in relationship development intervention, and a co-host of this radio show, and I love it.
And you guys are great at it.
Thank you.
Very
good. You should say who you are.
All right. Who am I? That's the question. Okay, Dave Isaac. Well, I'm the founder and the founder of BTBN, which is Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. And I'm a CPA, business consultant, probably been on the radio, I guess, about 7 years now. And we have a whole diverse program, lineup, business, psychology stuff, sports, entertainment. We reach the entire spectrum of people. And that's where we are. So today's show is about labels.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about labels because in some ways labels and how we talk about autism are a contentious issue in the autism community, but they're also an important issue both to those of us on the spectrum and those who talk about us. The thing is that to a lot of people, it can be uncomfortable saying, I'm autistic. And this is often sort of because autism carries a lot of baggage with it from movies like Rain Man or other situations where the public perspective on autism isn't really accurate. And so what we got that sort of prompted doing the show, I've been wanting to do a show on this topic for a while, but I wasn't really sure how to get a run-up to it, was that we'd heard some comments about you know, how we talk about autism, you know, calling it a disorder versus not talking about it as a disorder, and, you know, people who don't want to be labeled as autistic, or, you know, the change from Asperger's to autism and people losing that Asperger's diagnosis, which separated them from those who have an autism diagnosis, as sort of being an issue. And I wanted to sort of share my perspective and have Kim, you know, talk about her perspective about the whole thing. And so what that sort of begins with is there's a movement out there right now that is typically called the neurodiversity movement. And they talk about different mental issues. Some of them are disorders. Some of them are just different methods of processing. But the idea is that we're building a world now where physical differences are being accommodated for in many ways. That if someone has, you know, a life in a wheelchair, we build them ramps. If someone has other physical difficulties, you know, maybe they have a nutritious disorder or a mitochondrial disorder and they're weaker than a typical person of their age would be, we find ways to work around that. But people with mental challenges in day-to-day life, people who have cognitive disorders, who process information differently, who have a hard time maintaining focus, things like ADD, we find it a lot harder to incorporate them into day-to-day life. So there's the neurodiversity movement is working on talking about this issue and how we need to address it. And one of those things can be the issue of labels, that, you know, should we talk about autism as a disorder, as something that's wrong with people, or should we talk about it in a way that we present it as something that's just a difference and should be accepted?
Good.
Yeah, I'm still processing the heaviness of this topic. No, I think, you know, Paul and I have talked about this in the past and also a little bit today, and I think different things that I've noticed include things like people will have a preference towards one label or another based on their own understanding of autism and their own self-awareness of, you know, maybe how autism affects them, or maybe they believe it doesn't affect them. And I think a big theme that's been coming up is really clarifying, you know, what autism is, and also learning to use labels constructively. Because, you know, I know from the psychology standpoint, there is, you know, something labeling theory, you know, where if behaviors are deviant only when society labels them as deviant. You know, so some people say, well, if you're going to tell someone that they're this, they're going to start acting a certain way or getting worse or, you know, whatever they would want to say about that. But really, labels can be very useful if you have the understanding and the awareness behind them. And I think that's our big, you know, one of our big goals on this show, any show we have, and for today especially.
The way I see it, labels is, you know, there's meaning. There's certain common meanings attached to labels in society. And if they're negative in nature, it could add to the belief about that. And you could take that unconsciously, potentially, which could be challenging to get past that label. So I know, or I'm going to say it, neurolinguistic programming. I know in my NLP training, well, I didn't mention that.
Who no,
I know.
You didn't.
That's weird, isn't it? Out of all these
years. A little
bit. Yeah, but NLP, study of human excellence, and it's they're big on labels because it can program people a certain way. It's very possible if a label, if the meaning is everything within that context, and there's a built-in meaning to labels often, Paul.
And that's the important thing to talk about here, is that there's sort of two sides of it. There's the scientific label autism, what autism is as defined by the DSM-5. And the DSM-5 is, for our intent here, a dictionary of disabilities or other things that can be diagnosed. That the DSM-5 provides the strict definition, what it means to a clinician, but it doesn't provide the definition to the general public. That most people in the general public have never heard of the DSM-5, or if they have, they've never opened it up or read a single thing in it. So the second thing that you have is the common perception of autism. And that's, you know, how it showed up in Rain Man, how it shows up when someone on the news talks about whether that character on Big Bang Theory, whether Sheldon might show up on the autism spectrum, or what happens when Susan Boyle comes out and says she has autism, and people start saying, well, which of her behaviors were autism and which of her behaviors were personality quirks? And so you get sort of a general perception of autism. And this is what provides difficulty for a lot of people who are diagnosed with autism, is that if you have autism, you quickly learn that people build their expectations from this cultural view of autism. That, you know, if you tell someone that you have autism, they start thinking, well, does that mean that he's a savant, that he's going to have these skills that, was it Ray has? Is his name Ray in the movie?
Raymond
has. Or is he going to freak out if there's loud noises like a fire alarm? That people don't know what to expect from autism and have to build it from that. So the problem can be that people on the autism spectrum either don't want to be associated with the term autism because they're afraid that the baggage it carries will come to them, Or they want to really push this idea that autism isn't a disorder, that they don't like the use of autism spectrum disorder. And that has its own challenges in it because there's sort of no scientific question as to whether or not autism is a disorder, that we can see that the incidence rate of autism ties to heavy metal poisoning, to certain lacks of nutrients in the parents, to other things, that there are physical aspects of autism that are unquestionably a disorder. But there are aspects of autism that are the cognitive aspects that aren't necessarily a disorder, that provide someone a different insight into the world and allow them to operate in different ways. And so when talking about autism, it's a little dishonest to try to remove the disorder part, but it's also important to sort of distinguish for yourself, especially as a person with autism, which things about yourself you feel actively get in the way of you living the life you want to live, and which things about yourself you feel comfortable with and want to embrace. And so removing disorder from it is saying, well, there's nothing wrong with me. I think that for a lot of us on the autism spectrum, when we really think about it, we're comfortable saying, well, I have these challenges that I want to overcome. And that's saying there is something wrong here that I want to address. And if you aren't sort of willing to open up to the idea of a disorder, then you aren't willing to open up to addressing these challenges. So it's a very tough question because it's hard to say, I've got something wrong with me. But it's also really hard to talk to other people about autism if you won't address that, because they may see those things that you're struggling with and saying, well, they're sort of deluding themselves. And so if you want to remove the negative stigma of the term autism, you really have to start by being honest about it. Because if people see you being dishonest about it, then they're not going to listen to what you have to say about it, because they're like, well, he's sort of, you know, living in his own world there. He's not talking truthfully about the issue. So I think that that's sort of our starting point, is talking about being honest about it, talk about changing the way people perceive the word autism.
So is there a way to keep the term disorder, which that's not going away anytime soon? Because it's
not
like,
in a scientific sense, yeah.
Right. And,
well, and that's
but
not a term, that's not a term society created. That's what the professionals
right.
have deemed it, just because you need something to identify and categorize certain behaviors.
Well, maybe that's where the show comes in, and both you and Paul, to educate and redefine what disorder could mean.
There's a lot of sort of steps in how to improve the situation. And one of the simplest ones, and one of the major ones, is something that's called person-central or person-specific language. And that's when you don't say the autistic community. You say the community of people with autism. You don't say, you know, he's autistic. You say he's a person with autism. You always put their personhood first rather than the disorder. And that can be hard to break old speech patterns sometimes. Sometimes you don't think about it. But being conscious of how language and how we communicate shapes our thought, that it's important to always talk about people with autism as people. And that's just, you know, the very first point. But this challenge of neurodiversity and labels is in many ways sort of a civil rights challenge, because we're asking for acceptance. We're asking for recognition in the workplace and otherwise, because a lot of the current laws are based around physical disabilities. And while they acknowledge that you know, mental conditions exist, they don't really encourage training or talk about ways that they can be incorporated. That when you're seeking help in school, a lot of times they treat any mental disabilities the same thing. They put everyone in the same class where things are taught slower and you have longer time limits or whatever. And they don't really identify or even think about the unique ways in which people think and process information. So one thing is to sort of, well, I think I'll get back to this because I think we're about to have a break, is look at what lessons we can learn from sort of civil rights in the past to figure out how to talk about autism and how to present autism in a way that we could really begin changing the public perspective on it.
Well, let's take a quick break right now. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4. We're talking about labels, and we'll be right back.
Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Again, you are listening to Understanding Autism Live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. And I am Dave Isaac alongside Kimberly Isaac, Paul Loudon. We're talking about labels, very important. I think it's very important in which how people make meaning of labels. And everyone's different. They could assign a different label to the same word. Two people could look at it differently.
Absolutely. And I think that that's well, before the break, I was talking a little bit about civil rights and how we can take lessons from various civil rights movements. And one of the big lessons is taking ownership of the label that, you know, is not just about saying, I don't want to be identified as an autistic person, that there's no question that there's something going on here. And whether we choose autism as our label or we choose something else as our label, it's about choosing and embracing one and showing people what it really means. That, that you know, a big part of the civil rights movement for African Americans was having African Americans in government, having African Americans on the police force, having African Americans show up in people's everyday lives and people saying, oh, he's just another guy. That, you know, you take the mystique out of it, you take the otherness out of it and show that it's just a day-to-day thing. As long as people are seeing, you know, autism, and as soon as they think it, they think Raymond, then it's not working. But if you start saying, you know, these people are autistic, and one of them's a football player that's on a team that's popular, and one of them is, you know, an actress in a movie that did well, and you just, as soon as autism is something where it's a difference, but it's a difference that can still be incorporated in your day-to-day life and be someone that you can be friends with or whatever. As soon as autism is something that enters the cultural awareness as something that people find, I don't want to say ordinary, but not other, then that really helps it. So one of my concerns with this idea that a lot of people, you know, fighting the neurodiversity fight want to get rid of the labels and say, well, we just need to be accepting of how people think, is that autism as a diagnosis is never going to go away, or if it does, it's going to be a long time before it does. The idea of autism is going to be in the public consciousness for a very long time. And if you try to avoid the term autism, if I said to people, well, I'm not autistic, I have Asperger's, and they got rid of it, but it's still, I'm different from autism, then people are going to say, you know, if I'm considered credible, people are going to believe me. And if people believe me, then my example won't change their opinion of autism in any way, because they're going to say, well, Paul seems pretty okay, but he's not autistic. So what really is needed is more people in the autism community to say, yes, I do have autism, but that's okay. That, you know, that I'm not ashamed of it, that I can go out and do these things, and autism doesn't get in the way of it. It's not that I'm doing them despite autism, it's just that autism isn't relevant, you know, that I can drive and autism doesn't affect my ability to drive. You know, some people with varying, you know, places on the spectrum, autism may affect their ability to drive, but other people it won't. You know, some people have different challenges with broadness of the spectrum, and the way that the spectrum can impact people's lives differently increases understanding. And that's sort of one of my big concerns with this, talking about it not being a disorder and trying to avoid the term autism, is that, you know, I think that we grow more by taking ownership of it and using that ownership of it to change public perception than we do by trying to deny it and leaving those who can't really deny it, those who show classical, who are nonverbal and can't say, well, don't call me autistic, as the only examples people see of autism. Because when you leave those who are sort of the worst off as the only examples of people with autism, then everyone thinks that those worst off are typical rather than part of a broad spectrum.
So what you're saying is that it's maybe too narrow right now, and it's very similar to what I'm thinking too. Redefine it, expand the meaning, show different examples that, hey, it's across the board here.
And
that's what you're saying.
Give an accurate example.
Yeah.
Show them what autism really means so that they can understand it, rather than having them, you know, look at it as you know, just the narrow range of examples that they get from, you know, movies and TV shows, things that are often taken to an extreme because, while good from a storytelling perspective, it isn't really good from an educational perspective.
You know, and also, Kim, I believe it would help not on the spectrum, but the caregivers that are not on the spectrum, if they also understood it differently, because they may be really scared. That meaning, the narrow restrictive meaning could scare them. It could affect how they approach it. But what would happen if, it, like what Paul said, you expanded it, you showed accurate examples of just, you know, people in everyday industries, how would it affect
the
caregiver?
Well, I've actually experienced this in a way where I've always felt very comfortable around, you know, older people with autism, you know, teens and adults. And that's, and right now I think people are, professionals are becoming more comfortable with it. But I know at the time that I was really getting into it, part of the reason I was is nobody else was comfortable. You know, some of those stigmas are, you know, the worst, these worst case scenarios of people thinking, well, these people are taller, they're bigger, they're going to be aggressive, are they going to hurt me, you know, type thing. I've never been afraid that way. I feel like when someone looks to the humanness of someone first, that's the best place to start from my perspective, kind of with anything, you know, just the humanness of someone. But I know that, you know, years ago, people would look at me like, wow, you're working with adults. And I'm like, yeah, you know, like to me, it was weird that they were saying that. But I realized, you know, they're saying that because their perception, and these were professionals.
And they had a different meaning when it comes to adults. That's sort of interesting in itself.
So, you know, and I feel like one of the things that I've really strived to do is, you know, be a good example of how I, you know, interact with people, you know, adults on the spectrum, and, you know, how I speak about my job and stuff, so that if people see, oh, well, you know, Kim's okay, she's not scared, she's not freaking out, you know, oh, it's okay. And I've seen the trickle-down effect of that. You know, sometimes, like, I go to the ZWalk every year, you know, Jim Adams and, you know, ASU Research, they have the ZWalk every year, and I invite my clients and their families and my family and my friends. And, you know, I think by setting an example of my comfort level and my interactive style really transfers out to people. You know, I have some family that had never been around autism, or like my fiance, he didn't even know what autism was when he met me. And I love to see that simply just by reaching to the humanness in people, it eases everybody else around me. You know, now my fiance is like, wow, these people are cool. You know, wow, the stereotypes, how do they even get these things?
Yeah.
You know, but unless you have people who, I think, for the people on the spectrum to advocate this, because people aren't taking them very seriously, there's a lot of controversy. I feel like this is where family and friends and professionals need to stand alongside them, you know, and really approach the humanness. And you know what, there are strengths. Everybody has strengths. And, you know, with autism, there are weaknesses as they relate to, they're processing differently than, you know, what, again, here's another label, neurotypical people. It's something that's different. It doesn't mean it's scary. It's different. Something different going on. And I think that, you know, as a support to these people, you know, it's important that we model, you know, by through how we interact and how we talk to them, that these are just people. Like, they're people first, and really looking at it way. And even still professionals, I mean, it's not as often now, but I still occasionally will get the surprised look, like, you know, really, you work with adults? Have you ever been hurt? It's like, but don't they get mad? It's like, well, they're, you know. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't individuals out there that have co-occurring conditions alongside their autism, bipolar disorder maybe, or personality disorder. Those things are they're possible, but those aren't the autism. So I can't, you know, it's not really fair to lump everything into what autism is, because people on the spectrum, they do have, you know, higher chances of having some kind of co-occurring thing like depression or anxiety or some other kind of mood disorder. But again, it's not the autism, so it's not fair to say, you know.
So what's it going to take? It's just this or more awareness, education? You're two people. Can you get it done? Can you get it out there in a way that people can understand?
I think that, I mean, we're a start, obviously. I think we need more, I want to say outreach, that Temple Grandin talks about autism, but she talks about autism to parents of people with autism, to people who are, you know, training or doing therapy. That, you know, recently there was a book, Why I Jump, and the translator for the book, is it Why I Jump?
The Reason I Jump. Yeah.
And the translator of the book went on The Daily Show and talked about it. And the book was written by a Japanese man who is on the autism spectrum. And that was great, because that was someone talking about autism in front of a mainstream audience to normal people in a normal way. And that's what we need more of. You know, recently Daryl Hannah came out and said she is on the autism spectrum. Dan Aykroyd came out and said he was on the autism spectrum. Susan Boyle came out and said she was on the autism spectrum. These are all great examples of people who live day-to-day life on the autism spectrum and manage to get by and, you know, manage to be pretty well liked by the general public. But we need more of those, and we need people who are in an ongoing active career that, you know, with Dan Aykroyd, with Daryl Hannah especially, that they did some great movies, but they aren't really so active now. They aren't in the public consciousness. For people our age, we all know who they are. You take someone 20 years later, or younger, or 10 years younger, and they're like, so what did Dan Aykroyd do? Or, you know, maybe they know Ghostbusters and that's it, you know? And so, you know, it would be great if, you know, people on the autism spectrum who are out there doing non-autism-related stuff started talking about it, started talking about their experiences on the spectrum and the challenges it's given them. And I know that's scary, especially with the way preconception about autism is right now, with the way that, you know, people, you know, if someone, if you took someone famous, and if pick a football player on your team.
Let's pick, how about Peyton Manning.
Okay, let's pick Peyton Manning. Now, Peyton Manning came out and he said autism. The first question 3/4 of the people would ask is, so how's he hiding it?
That's
they would assume that there were symptoms of it that he's not showing people. that he's having those outbursts. And they're like, well, is he taking medication so he doesn't have those on the field? Or, like, people would wonder how it's working because people have this conception about autism. And so you need a lot of people saying, I've got autism and it's okay. And that's something that it's going to take time. But I think that's what we really need, that you know, shows like ours help, but we really need more, quote, mainstream people demonstrating that it is something that you can live with and talking about, you know, the challenges that face them and being upfront about those challenges, saying, look, you know, I really do struggle with this sort of thing, and I found that, you know, fortunately the career path I took allows me to mostly avoid it, that, you know, as a musician, I sing on stage, but I have a manager to help arrange my schedule, so I don't have to do a lot of this stuff that I found really challenging when I was trying to get by on my own, or things like that. So it really is one of those questions where we have to take ownership of it, but part of taking ownership of it is making it comfortable enough that people admit to it rather than trying to hide from it or deny it.
And I think that that's a very good point, and I think what makes it it's an emotional subject for everybody involved, and I think a lot of times for people on the spectrum, you know, their confidence tends to be very, very low because they're experiencing a lot of negative interactions, likely, or things that they don't expect to happen, you know, because they're putting forth all this effort and they're doing everything they were taught to do and it's not working. And so, you know, sometimes when someone doesn't have high confidence, they're not going to be the first people to come out and, you know, they need to be built up, you know. And so something that I think is important is so many aspects to this, but remembering, you know, competence is huge and looking at someone's strengths is huge. And if you're listening and you know someone who's having a hard time with their diagnosis in their life or just the label itself, you know, is helping them to identify things in a balanced way. You know, let's look at what you know you're good at and look at who you are as a person and not to clump everything into one, you know, to one pile or another. So
I wonder if one of the couple starting places is somehow engaged people in Hollywood. Maybe Daryl Hannah would like an interview. Maybe some other people.
Well, we were going to talk to you and Breakthrough Entertainment about that.
Yes, I think that's a great idea because that would be one way to start to redefine and expand the meaning if at least some of the people that did start talking about it, you know, why they started talking about, why didn't they in the past? Did they know to? Were they afraid of repercussions? Maybe job interviews could have an impact, right? I mean, it's possible.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
But so education would be really important in getting to the right people.
Yeah.
And that I think that's very doable because they got to have some type of passion for it, I would suspect. I know Jenny McCarthy, I think her kids may have autism. She's passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, you know, she's fairly well-known. So I think there's several people that I think would be very happy to talk about that because maybe they've had some pain through their life. And if they can prevent that for others, I think that's a nice reason to do it.
I think people have good hearts and they want to help. I think a lot of times the obstacles are they're unclear, they don't know how, their confidence, you know, maybe the people around them. Some people aren't involved in supportive networks, whether it's their own families or their friends. And, you know, and I know, so Hollywood is one thing. And in my mind, I'm also thinking just getting a representative sample of the spectrum too. You know, so, you know, my co-host Paul is Paul and he's on the spectrum and he's an individual person, and he has certain challenges that someone else that I work with, you know, may not have, but there's similarities and differences. And I think if we can get a variety of people to share, people can get perspective, you know, oh, wow, you know, this is what this looks like. And so I think getting community together, being connected and supporting one another and just, you know, working on building that community, you start to network and you build each other up and get involved, and I think that would be something really good to look at.
But also the professional community, perhaps.
Yeah, the professional community.
The ones that were saying, well, Kim, you're doing that.
Well, sometimes if that, you know, I don't know if this is actually a true statement, but it feels true sometimes. Sometimes that feels like the hardest.
Mm.
Sometimes professionals get really set, you know, in their ways, and they're just not, you know, but I guess that could be true of anyone in the community. I know we have to take a short break, and when we come back, we can you know, continue talking about it. But
yes, let's now no doubt about it. This is Understanding Autism. Of course, the second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4. And we're talking about labels. Very important that people understand how they perceive a label, how others perceive a label. How can you redefine it to make it more empowering? That's how I like to look at it. And we'll be right back.
Bomb and Speen PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Speen works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
To Understanding Autism here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, and the second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4, you can hear Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon discuss of autism. Today we're talking about labels and how important that is to get the education out to really understand truly and accurately what is autism.
Yes, and so coming back around to sort of the neurodiversity movement, like I said, one important thing is changing the general public perception. And that really ties into what the neurodiversity movement is working towards, because the goal is acceptance and integration of ways where we can involve ourselves in their lives. And it's really difficult when you're working with different terms than the other people are working with. And until, you know, they don't really know what you're asking for. If you say, well, we think differently and we want to work with you, and they say, well, you think differently because you're going to start screaming when the fire alarm goes off, you know, then that really makes it hard to talk about acceptance and incorporation. But when you're willing to say, well, that's something I'm working on, but at the same time, I promise, and the neurological developments that have led me to process information differently aren't necessarily something I can address, but they're something that can be addressed by changing this aspect of the workplace, by saying, you know, I need schedules handled this way rather than this way, and I'll still get things done on time, but I can only get them done on time if we, you know, make this accommodation. You have much more grounds to do it once, you know, people know enough about autism that you don't have to self-advocate. The thing about autism is it's hard to explain autism. You know, it's hard for people not on the spectrum to explain autism, but when you're on the spectrum, because communication is typically an area where you have a deficit. So, you know, it's like asking someone in a wheelchair to demonstrate the difference between walking and moving around in a wheelchair. Well, how are they going to do that? You know? And so, you know, raising public awareness of it and raising public understanding of it really helps give us the tools, because you can say, well, you know, there was, you know, you see, you know, the Daryl Hannah talk about it or something, and she talks about the challenges she had. And then you've got a famous person echoing the same thing that you're trying to communicate. You can either use her words, or you can direct them to the interview. You can otherwise just use that as an example, saying, you know, look, I'm not the only person who needs this. This isn't me saying I need this, but no one else does. This is, you know, an issue with my condition. And here's someone who's demonstrated that if you find a good way to work around it, it works out. That you need those success stories. That there's a benefit to incorporating people with autism and not just putting them into care and saying, okay, you know, they're just someone with a disability. Give them help and ignore them. That, you know, if we want to incorporate, we need to find ways to show society who we are and what that means in both the positives and the negatives, that we need to be realistic about, you know, saying, like for myself, I know that I have real challenges with self-management, keeping track of my own schedule and keeping on top of tasks. But I also know that I really don't need that much help in terms of reminders about tasks to really stay better on top of them. That just, you know, having a reminder every now and then, having someone ask me how it's going, really a really big difference, and that's sort of a minimal amount of effort on someone else's part, and the amount of extra stuff I get done really outweighs the minimal extra amount of work they have to do. So knowing that, I can communicate, this is something that really helps me. But for other people in the autism spectrum, they may not realize that, and having an employer who knows more about the autism spectrum and can try things like this based on, you know, public awareness being greater about it. So that's where the issue of it being a disorder comes in, is that there are things about ourselves that we know are problems and we want to seek help with. That's the whole nature of accommodations. But there are also things about ourselves that we really want accepted, that, you know, much weight on certain social things and social cues. You know, that I feel communication should be, you know, literal in many cases, where other people think that, you know, it should be more emotional. And so, you know, I'm bad about scheduling myself, but I also want you guys to accept that when I'm talking to you, I'm probably more literal, and I don't think it's unreasonable I think it's unreasonable for you to tell me that I need to figure out what you mean by different from the dictionary. And so we have to be able to define what accommodations we feel should be made for what are unreasonable, and to do that, we have to accept that, you know, some things are reasonable, that it is a disorder, we do need help in some areas, but other areas we should say, no, that's enough. This is how we think, this is how we are, and this is how we experience the world. You wouldn't tell a colorblind person that they need to start, you know, figuring out their own way to, you know, guess what the colors are, you know. You would start using different colors that they can recognize, things that are higher contrast. And so, you know, that's the thing, is that if it's really to incorporate, the neurodiversity movement in general needs to sort of have this idea of yes, we need to stand our ground and be confrontational about certain issues, but we really need to know how to fight reasonably.
Sounds like what you're talking about is the community be able to, when you said, like, if you literally, you know, you're the meaning of words are very literal to you. And
in many cases, yes.
Yeah, and you'd want people to understand that. That's communicating, and they should have the communication skills to understand that, too, and expand their flexibility. But, you know, this brought up a question as you're talking, Paul, and I think this is related, is do you know, and you may or may not, but the percentage of people that don't even know they're on the spectrum?
Yes, no idea.
Could it be huge, though?
I would say that probably half of people with autism are undiagnosed, would be my guess.
See, now, to me, that's amazing, and I'll tell you why. As you're talking, you're both talking about this, is just imagine the misunderstanding that's going on in marriages. If one or both have, they're on the spectrum, they don't even know it. In jobs where an employer just smacking, you know, someone around saying, hey, why don't cases, whatever the core deficit could be. I mean, this must be going on and tearing down the self-esteem of people.
Well, it is.
And creating amazing havoc.
I get more so lately from people in marriages who are, I suspect my spouse has autism, and it's, I mean, every time just talking, it's like, well, we've been in counseling, traditional counseling's not helping. Well, it's not going to help until the person on the spectrum understands,
right,
or for both of them to understand that they're thinking about things differently and they're processing things differently, and that's been really common for me lately.
One of the big things about like this, where it's sort of the civil rights issues. A lot of people, like in the issue of feminism and racism, they talk about the idea of privilege, where being a white male in America tends to offer you advantages, even if you're intentionally trying to take advantage of them. You can be the least sexist, least racist person on earth, but because you're interacting with people who may be sexist or racist, they may treat you nicer just for being a white male than they would treat, you know, someone else, even though you have done nothing wrong. And that's an issue in the world for people with any sort of cognitive condition, is that the world is built around what we consider neurotypical people. One example I've come up with recently is I'm left-handed. Dave, can you think of three things a left-handed person to do?
Eat. Scissors.
Yeah, you made a scissor hand motion.
Yeah,
you just said,
hey, nicely done. He saw that. And probably write.
Writing and scissors or two. I don't really find difficulty with eating, but other people might. I don't know.
If you're with a right-handed person.
Oh, yeah. Next to someone. If you're eating with people.
Out of the five of us that are in here, four of us are lefties. You're the only one that's a righty.
Oh, my gosh. How is that possible? I thought
that's
there's more lefties these days?
Actually, the number of left-handed people is increasing. I think we're up to about 15 or 20%.
Really?
There used to be a lot of pressure not to be left-handed. Like,
yeah, I heard
now we've
that.
Learned not to do that.
Yeah.
The numbers are increasing. But the thing is I walked into Joanne's Fabric to buy someone a gift for Christmas, and I noticed that they had a scissors aisle. Hundreds of scissors of different sorts. They had, you know, fabric scissors and scissors with jagged edges to make patterns of the. Not a single pair I could find were left-handed. If I wanted left-handed scissors, I cannot go to a store and buy them. I have to order them online.
That's amazing.
You mentioned writing. Writing is a problem in many ways. Our entire written language assumes you're writing from left to right. So if you're left-handed, you smudge your writing if it's a pencil, you get ink smears. Notebooks are designed so that the spiral is on the left side. So if you want to rest your hand on it, it's incredibly uncomfortable.
It's so annoying.
If you sit down at a computer in the library, the mouse is on the right. You can't move it to the left. So if you're more comfortable mousing with your left hand, it's a problem.
That is not fair.
That
it gets better.
Ooh.
Spaghetti jars.
Spaghetti jars. I don't
opening
know.
The jar, push with both of your arms to open it as a right-handed person. You can put your shoulders into it and really push. The left-handed, you're pulling.
Oh, wow.
You're using different muscles entirely that are typically not as strong.
That is
open
amazing.
Open jars as a left-handed person. No. And that's something that you never even think about. It wouldn't have occurred to you. And that's what the civil rights people mean when they talk about privilege, is that there are things that have become such a normal, everyday thing that it wouldn't even occur to people that it could be having a negative effect on someone. And as someone with a cognitive condition, you run into this sort of thing as well, but they're more subtle. If you think about ordering fast food, it's a face-to-face social experiment that you and you talk with them. Maybe they greet you. Maybe they ask you questions. You just want to order a number. Would you like to supersize it? And you're like, is it impolite to say no? What am I supposed to do here? You know, that it's a social thing. And that really sort of favors neurotypical people, people who don't have social challenges. And it's just, there are so many aspects of the world that can be challenging for someone on the autism spectrum that it wouldn't even begin to occur to someone that that could even be a difficulty. And we're going to discover more of them, you know, over the coming years as the neurodiversity movement really explores what it means to have a different cognitive process than what we assume is normal. But just those left-hand examples provide sort of a physical way people go, you know, I never would have thought that spaghetti jars could be a problem for a left-handed person.
Wow.
You know, I never would have thought that going to McDonald's could be a problem for an autistic person. But it really can be. And there are so many things like that. And that's sort of what the neurodiversity movement needs to work on. And if you just said, well, we need to have touch screens at McDonald's so I can order on that, without people really understanding, it might seem like an unreasonable request. But once you really talking about autism and talking about the challenge with it and seeing that we're good people, then you sort of create a situation where people are like, oh, yeah, I can get that. You know, and so people need to have a level of awareness where they can understand why you want it emotionally. Because that's one thing that, you know, you talk about is that explaining something can only go so far. Until you can create an emotional attachment to it, you really can't necessarily get through resistance. And so having people have sort of an emotional, empathetic challenges of someone on the autism spectrum, it's really hard to make progress.
Man, that I had no idea. That's what you four in this room are going through, all left-handed. Did you know that, Kim?
Did I know what?
About spaghetti.
Well, I actually make homemade sauce. I don't do jars.
Oh.
But, believe, I mean, it's yeah.
Well,
I mean,
maybe
I know.
Maybe a water bottle. The water bottles are pretty easy to open these days.
But the thing is, I mean, I've gotten used to it. It's still annoying, but I don't. Well.
You don't think about it.
I mean,
alone any time after that.
Yeah.
So.
But I think, I think it's important, though. I mean, I keep hearing all of these things are leading me to just remember, too, that this is such a group. I mean, so we need more people with autism to stand up. We need more people to explain their experience, and we need all of that. But we also need people who don't have autism to stand with the people that have autism and support them, because we're expecting them to take on something that's hard when they need to feel understood and genuinely be understood and be supported in this. And so I think for families that are listening and friends, you know, one thing that I think is a really good idea to do is take the time to really learn, to really listen, you know, to the people in your life that have autism or observe, and take them seriously. It's something I hear a lot of, and it just kind of breaks. People on the spectrum are communicating the best they can with, you know, they're processing information differently than we are. And a lot of times they're doing 100% to explain and convey what they want, but they're getting negative feedback. Like, well, how can that be? Or, no, you're just drama or exaggerating or whatever. You know, take them seriously and believe them. You know, don't just brush their communications off. Take them seriously and really take the time to learn, I think is a really good step for people in those support positions.
And how about the quality of being flexible? Would that be helpful for caregivers?
Well, hopefully you learn that in your learning. But, oh, yeah, no, flexible. But I think even more than that, the first step has to be stopping your own self and saying, I really need to take this seriously. I really need to listen. I really need to, you know, be involved and not let my own thoughts and opinions get in the way. Let me put those behind me for a minute and really see what's happening here. And, you know, and learn more, and just the listening and the being there. And, you know, I think, you know, even now, and sometimes I think, you know, even from my perspective, sometimes something happens and I'm, you know, a little surprised, or I forget, just because most of my habits, you know, I am processing a certain way and people I work with are processing another. And so, you know, nobody gets it right all the time, but I'm humbled frequently because I remember, wow, you know, I really need to humble myself to say, you know what, just because I think something, you know, this should be done this way or everyone should be doing. I mean, getting rid of your shoulds and getting rid of expecting everybody to be a certain way and just really getting to know the person and learning about the person. Everybody's different, you know, anyway, but just taking that time and making the effort to let them know you want to, I think goes a really long way.
So what seems to me is that maybe there's two platforms here. One is obviously education, understanding, get to the right people that can get to the many, and also just the general population to self-improvement in the way of being flexible, more flexible, and stepping out of their own way, is I think what you said, really get and look to know there's different ways of looking at things. That would be valuable as well. We only have about 3 minutes left, I believe, so any parting words? Kim, you want to go first?
Well, I want to thank Paul for sharing all of this. I feel like even hearing you on the show, I talk to you all the time, but I need to hear that as a professional over and over to keep myself in the right frame of mind, and I just appreciate you sharing all of your thoughts
and,
about
that. You know, it's hard. That's the problem, is that a lot of the challenges that those of us on the autism spectrum are up against are so built into the neurotypical way of thinking that people who are doing it not even don't recognize they're doing it. They can't recognize that they're doing it. You know, if you had to stop and think about how to make your heart beat, you would have no idea how to do that. And, you know, it takes a lot of study to really understand the process, and it takes a lot of practice to be able to, you know, there are people who can slow their heartbeat or speed up their heartbeat at will. And, you know, and thinking differently is that kind of thing, that you really need to take time to study and understand before you can change how you think. So it's not... And we on the autism spectrum have to recognize we aren't asking for something easy. We are asking for something big. But it's big and it's important.
Very important.
So how do they get in touch with you? You have Facebook. You got a bunch of contact information. How do you?
I think still the best way to get in contact with us right now is our Facebook page at facebook.com/understandingautismradio.
Excellent. And
it's been on there a lot. And actually, I want to thank everybody. We've gotten a lot of comments on our pages lately. Just thank you for
being a part of our community.
Being a part of our community. I love community. And, you know, if you have any ideas for shows, questions, or comments about today's show, post them up there. We read them, and we'll respond.
And you'll answer.
Yep.
Very good. This is invaluable. So, and tomorrow, we still have more Understanding Autism. But before, we have Paul Loudon, People and Games.
Yeah.
What do we got?
I'll be reviewing the year 2013 and talking about the major events in games and the game industry that I think will be shaping what happens in 2014.
And that's becoming very popular.
Oh, absolutely. It's huge. We have the new consoles out, and they sold, between the two of them, 7 million units from their release in mid-November to the end of the year. So that's 7 million people investing pieces of hardware in just a month and a half.
Would you like some stock in those companies? Probably. Anyway, this is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. We'll be back, People and Games with Paul Loudon, starting at 2 o'clock. Of course, that's Arizona time. Is that Mountain time? I think it's called Mountain.
I think you're Mountain right now.
Yeah. Right now.
And we'll be back at 3 with Understanding Autism. Yep. We'll be talking about transitions again.
Oh, transitions. Very good. Paul Loudon, thank you. Kimberly Isaac, thank you. Have a great night. We'll